Chapter 12. Aboard the steamer Fever Dream, Mississippi River, August 1857. Abner Marsh had a mind that was not unlike his body. It was big all around, ample in size and capacity, and he crammed all sorts of things into it. It was strong as well. When Abner Marsh took something in his hand, it did not easily slip away, and when he took something in his head, it was not easily forgotten. He was a powerful man with a powerful brain, but body and mind shared one other trait as well. They were deliberate. Some might even say slow. Marsh did not run, he did not dance, he did not scamper or slide along. He walked with a straightforward, dignified gait that nonetheless got him where he wanted to go. So it was with his mind. Abner Marsh was not quick in word or thought, but he was far from stupid. He chewed over things thoroughly, but at his own pace. As the Fever Dream steamed out of Natchez, Marsh was only beginning to mull over the story he had gotten from Joshua York. The more he mulled, the more he fretted. If you could credit it, Joshua's outlandish story about hunting for vampires did explain a respectable amount of the strange goings-on that had plagued the Fever Dream. But it didn't explain everything. Abner Marsh's slow but tenacious memory kept throwing up questions and recollections that floated around in his head like dead wood floats on the river. Good for nothing, but bothersome. Simon, for instance, licking up mosquitoes. Joshua's extraordinary night vision. And most of all, the way he'd raged the day Marsh had come barging into his cabin. He hadn't come outside, neither, to see them run against the southerner. That worried Marsh considerably. It was fine for Joshua to say he kept night hours on account of these vampires of his, but that still didn't explain the way he'd acted that afternoon. Most folks Abner Marsh knew kept normal daylight hours, but that didn't mean they wouldn't hoist themselves out of bed at 3 in the morning if there was something interesting to gawk at. Marsh badly felt the need to talk it over with someone. Jonathan Jeffers was a demon for book learning, and Carl Fram probably knew every damn fool story that had ever been told along the damn fool river. Either of them would likely know everything there was to know about these vampires. Only he couldn't talk to them. He'd promised Joshua, and he was beholden to the man, and wasn't about to go and betray him a second time. Not without cause, anyway. And all he had were half-formed suspicions. The suspicions got more formed every day, though, as the Fever Dream loafed down the Mississippi. Generally, they ran by day now, and tied up at twilight, then set out again the next morning. They made better time than they had before Natchez, which heartened Marsh. Other changes pleased him less. Marsh did not cotton to Joshua's new friends. He decided in short order that they were every bit as queer as Joshua's old friends, keeping the same night hours and all. Raymond Ortega struck Marsh as a restless, untrustworthy sort. The man wouldn't keep to passenger territory and kept turning up in places he didn't belong. He was polite enough in a haughty, indolent fashion, but Marsh got a chill off him. Valerie was warmer, but almost as disturbing, with her soft words and provocative smiles and those eyes of hers. She didn't act like Raymond Ortega's fiancée at all. Right from the first, she was real friendly with Joshua. Too damn friendly, if you asked Marsh. It was bound to cause trouble. A proper lady would have stayed to the ladies' cabin, but Valerie spent her nights with Joshua in the Grand Saloon and sometimes took walks on the deck with him. Marsh even heard one man say that they'd gone up to Joshua's cabin together. He tried to warn York about the kind of scandalous talk that was starting up, but Joshua just shrugged it off. "Let them have their scandal, Abner, if it pleases them," he said. "Valerie is interested in our boat, and it is my pleasure to show it to her. There is nothing between us but friendship, you have my word." He looked almost sad when he said that. "I might wish that it were otherwise, but that is the truth."
"You better be goddamn careful what you're wishing," Marsh said bluntly. "That Ortega might have his own opinions on the matter. He's from New Orleans, probably one of those Creoles. They'll fight a duel over just about any damn thing, Joshua."
Joshua York smiled. "I have no fear of Raymond, but I thank you for your warning, Abner. Now please, let Valerie and me conduct our own affairs." Marsh did just that, but not comfortably. He was certain that Ortega would make trouble sooner or later, especially when Valerie Marceau went on to become Joshua's constant companion during the nights that followed. That goddamned woman was blinding him to the dangers all about him, but there wasn't a thing Marsh could do about it. And that was only the start of it. At each landing, more strangers came aboard, and Joshua always gave them cabins. At Bayou Sarah, he and Valerie left the fever dream one night and returned with a pale, heavy man named Jean Ardon. A few minutes downriver, they'd put in at a woodyard, and Ardon had gone and fetched the sallow-faced dandy named Vincent. At Baton Rouge, four more strangers had taken passage. At Donaldsonville, another three. And then there were those dinners. As his strange company began to grow, Joshua York ordered a table set up in the Texas parlor, and there he would dine at midnight with his companions, new and old. Supper they took with everyone else in the main cabin, but these dinners were private. The custom started in Bayou Sarah. Abner Marsh allowed once to Joshua how the idea of a regular meal at midnight took his fancy, but that didn't get him invited. Joshua only smiled, and the meals went on, the number of diners growing each night. Finally, Marsh's curiosity got the better of him, and he managed to walk by the parlour a couple of times to glance in the window. There wasn't much to see, just some folks eating and talking. The oil lamps were dim and subdued, the curtains half-drawn. Joshua sat at the head of the table, Simon on his right-hand side and Valerie to his left. Everybody was sipping from glasses of Joshua's vile elixir, several bottles of which had been uncorked. The first time Marsh wandered by, Joshua was talking animatedly, and the rest were listening. Valerie stared at him, almost worshipfully. The second time Marsh peeked in, Joshua was listening to Jean Ardon, one hand resting casually on the tablecloth. As Marsh watched, Valerie placed her own hand on top of it. Joshua glanced at her and smiled fondly. Valerie smiled back. Abner Marsh looked quickly for Raymond Ortega, muttered, "Goddamn fool, woman," under his breath, and hurried away scowling. Marsh tried to make sense of it all, these queer strangers, these odd goings-on, of all Joshua York had told him about vampires. It wasn't easy, and the more he thought on it, the more confused he got. The library on the Fever Dream had no books about vampires or anything like that, and he wasn't about to go stealing it to Joshua's cabin again. At Baton Rouge, he took himself into town and bought a few rounds at some likely grog shops, hoping to find out something that way. When he could, he'd introduce the subject of vampires into the talk, usually by turning to his drinking companions and saying, "Say, you ever heard anything about vampires along the river?" He figured that was safer than raising the subject on the steamer, where the very word might start some bad talk. A few folks laughed at him or gave him odd looks. One free man of colour, a burly suit-black fellow with a broken nose whom Marsh accosted in a particularly smoky tavern, ran off as soon as Marsh asked his question. Marsh tried to run after him, but was soon left behind wheezing. Others seemed to know considerable about vampires, though none of the stories had a damn thing to do with the Mississippi. All the stuff he'd heard from Joshua's lips, about crosses and garlic and coffins full of dirt, he had repeated, and more besides. Marsh took to watching York and his companions closely at supper, and afterward in the Grand Saloon. Vampires didn't eat or drink, he'd been told, but Joshua and the others drank copious amounts of wine and whiskey and brandy when they weren't sipping York's private stock, and all of them were only too glad to do justice to a nice chicken or pork chop. Joshua was always wearing his silver ring, with its sapphire big as a pigeon's eye, and none of them seemed bothered by all the silver about the cabin. They used the silverware proper enough when they ate, better than most of the Fever Dream's crew. And when the chandeliers were lit by night, the mirrors all up and down the main cabin gleamed brilliantly, and crowds of finely dressed reflections came to life on either side of them, and danced and drank and played cards just like the real folks in the real saloon. Abner Marsh, night after night, found himself looking into those mirrors. Joshua was always there where he was supposed to be, smiling, laughing, gliding from mirror to mirror, arm in arm with Valerie, talking politics with a passenger, listening to Fram's river yarns, sharing private talks with Simon or Jean Ardon. Each night a thousand Joshua Yorks walked the Fever Dream's carpeted deck, each as alive and grand as all the others. His friends cast reflections too. That ought to have been enough, but Marsh's slow, suspicious mind was still disquieted. It wasn't until Donaldsonville that he hit on a plan to stop his fretting. He went into town with a canteen and filled it up with holy water from a Papist church near to the river. Then he took aside the boy who waited their end of the table and gave him 50 cents.
"You fill Captain York's water glass from this tonight, you hear?" Marsh told him. "I'm playing him a joke."
During supper, the waiter kept looking at York expectantly, waiting for the joke to get funny. He was disappointed. Joshua drank down the holy water, easy as you please.
Well, damn, Marsh muttered to himself afterwards. That sure ought to settle it.
But it didn't. And that night Abner Marsh excused himself from the Grand Saloon to do some thinking. He'd been sitting up on the Texas porch for a couple of hours, alone, his chair leaned back and his feet up over the railing, when he heard the rustle of skirts on the stairway. Valerie drifted over and stood close beside him, smiling down. "Good evening, Captain Marsh," she said. Abner Marsh's chair thumped back to the deck as he pulled his boots off the rail, scowling.
"Passengers ain't supposed to be up on the Texas," he said, trying to hide his annoyance.
"It was so warm down below. I thought it might be cooler up here."
"Well, that's true," Marsh replied uncertainly.
He didn't know quite what to say next. The truth was, women had always made him feel uncomfortable. They had no place in a steamboatman's world, and Marsh had never quite known how to deal with them. Beautiful women made him even more ill at ease, and Valerie was as disconcerting as any fancy New Orleans matron. She stood with one slender hand curled lightly around a carved post, looking off over the water toward Donaldsonville. "We'll reach New Orleans tomorrow, won't we?" she asked. Marsh stood up, figuring it probably wasn't polite to be sitting down with Valerie standing.
"Yes, ma'am," he said. "We ain't but a few hours upriver, and I mean to steam in sparklin', so it won't take hardly no time at all."
"I see." She turned suddenly, and her pale, shapely face was very serious as she fixed him with her huge purple eyes. "Joshua says you are the true master of the fever dream. In some curious way, he has much respect for you. He will listen to you."
"We're partners," Marsh said.
"If your partner were in danger, would you come to his aid?" Abner Marsh scowled, thinking of the vampire stories Joshua had told him, conscious of how pale and beautiful Valerie looked in the starlight, how deep her eyes were.
"Joshua knows he can come to me if he's got trouble," Marsh said. "A man who wouldn't help his partner ain't no kind of a man at all."
"Words," Valerie said scornfully, tossing back her thick black hair. The wind was in it, and it moved about her face as she spoke. "Joshua York is a great man, a strong man, a king. He deserves a better partner than you, Captain Marsh." Abner Marsh felt the blood rushing to his face.
"What the hell are you talking about?" he demanded.
She smiled slyly. "You broke into his cabin," she said. Marsh was suddenly furious.
"He told you that?" he said. "God damn him anyhow, we had it out over that. Ain't none of your never mind neither."
"It is," she said. "Joshua is in great danger. He is bold, reckless. He must have help. I want to help him, but you, Captain Marsh, you only give him words."
"I don't have one goddamn idea what you're talking about, woman," Marsh said. "What kind of help does Joshua need? I offered to help him with these damned vamp, with some troubles he got, but he didn't want to hear none of it."
Valerie's face softened suddenly. "Would you really help him?" she asked.
"He's my goddamn partner."
"Then turn your steamer, Captain Marsh. Take us away from here. Take us to Natchez, to St. Louis, I don't care, but not to New Orleans. We must not go to New Orleans tomorrow." Abner Marsh snorted.
"Why the hell not?" he demanded.
When Valerie looked away instead of answering, he went on.
"This here is a steamboat, not some goddamned horse I can ride any place I got a notion. We got a schedule to keep. Folks have taken passage with us, freight to discharge. We got to go to New Orleans," he scowled. "And what about Joshua?"
"He'll be asleep in his cabin come dawn," Valerie said. "When he wakes, we'll be safely upriver."
"Joshua's my partner," Marsh said. "Man's got to trust his partner. Maybe I spied on him once, but I ain't going to do anything like that again, not for you and not for nobody. And I ain't going to turn the fever dream around without telling him. Now if Joshua comes to me and says he don't want to go on to New Orleans, hell, maybe we can talk it over. But not otherwise. You want me to go ask Joshua about this?"
"No," Valerie said quickly, alarmed.
"I got a good mind to tell him anyway," Marsh said. "He ought to know that you're plotting when his back is turned."
Valerie reached out and took him by the arm. "Please, no," she implored. Her grip was strong. "Look at me, Captain Marsh." Abner Marsh had been about to stomp away, but something in her voice compelled him to do as she bid. He looked into those purple eyes and kept looking. I'm not so hard to look at, she said, smiling. I've seen you look before, Captain. You can't keep your eyes away from me, can you? Marsh's throat was very dry. Valerie tossed her hair back again, in a wild, flamboyant gesture. Steamboats can't be the only thing you dream of, Captain Marsh. This boat is a cold lady, a poor lover. Warm flesh is better than wood and iron. Marsh had never heard a woman talk like that before. He stood there, thunderstruck. Come closer, Valerie said, and she pulled him to her until he stood only inches from her upturned face. Look at me, she said. He could sense the trembling warmth of her, so near at hand, and her eyes were vast purple pools, cool and silky and inviting. You want me, Captain, she whispered. No, Marsh said. Oh, you want me. I can see the desire in your eyes. No, Marsh protested. You're Joshua. Valerie laughed. Light, airy laughter, sensuous, musical. Don't concern yourself with Joshua. Take what you want. You're afraid. That's why you fight it so. Don't be afraid. Abner Marsh shook violently, and in the back of his mind he realized with a start that he was trembling with lust. He had never wanted a woman so badly in his life. Yet somehow he was resisting, fighting it, though Valerie's eyes were drawing him closer and the world was full of the scent of her. Take me to your cabin now, she whispered. I'm yours tonight. You are, Marsh said weakly. He felt sweat dripping off his brow, clouding his eyes. No, he muttered. No, this ain't... It can be, she said. All you need do is promise. Promise? Marsh repeated hoarsely. The violet eyes beckoned, blazed. Take us away from New Orleans. Promise me that, and you can have me. You want it so much. I can feel it. Abner Marsh brought his hands up, took her by the shoulders. He shook. His lips were dry. He wanted to crush her to him in a bear-like embrace, tumble her into his bed. But instead, somehow, he called up all the strength that was in him and shoved her away roughly. She cried out, stumbled, went down on one knee, and Marsh, freed of those eyes, was roaring, "Get out of here!" he bellowed. "Get the hell off of my Texas! What the hell kind of woman are you? Get the hell out of here! You're nothing but... Get out of here!" Valerie's face turned up again towards his, and her lips were drawn back. "I can make you," she started angrily. "No," Joshua York said, firmly, quietly, from behind her. Joshua had appeared from the shadows as suddenly as if the darkness itself had taken on human form. Valerie stared at him, made a small noise deep in her throat, and fled down the stairs. Marsh felt so drained he could hardly stand up. "God damn," he muttered. He pulled a handkerchief from a pocket and wiped the sweat off his brow. When he finished, Joshua was looking at him patiently.
"I don't know what you saw, Joshua, but it wasn't what you might think."
"I know exactly what it was, Abner," Joshua replied. He did not sound especially angry. "I have been here nearly the whole time. When I noticed that Valerie had left the saloon, I went in search of her, and I heard your voices as I came up the stairs."
"I never heard you," Marsh said.
Joshua smiled. "I can be very quiet when it suits my purposes, Abner."
"That woman," Marsh said, she offered to... Hell, she's just a goddamn..."
The words would not come.
"She ain't no lady," he finished weakly. "Put her off, Joshua. Her and Ortega both."
"No."
"Why the hell not?" Marsh roared. "You heard her."
"It makes no difference," Joshua said calmly. "If anything, what I heard makes me cherish her all the more. It was for me, Abner. She cares for me more than I had hoped, more than I dared expect." Abner Marsh cussed furiously.
"You ain't making one goddamn bit of sense."
Joshua smiled softly. "Perhaps not. This is not your concern, Abner. Leave Valerie to me. She will not cause trouble again. She was only afraid."
"Afraid of New Orleans?" Marsh said. "Of vampires. She knows."
"Yes."
"You sure you can handle whatever we're steaming into?" Marsh said. "If you want to skip New Orleans, say so, damn it. Valerie thinks..."
"What do you think, Abner?" York asked. Marsh looked at him for a long, long time. Then he said,
"I think we're going to New Orleans."
and both of them smiled. And so it was that the fever dream steamed into New Orleans the next morning, with Dapper Dan Albright at her wheel and Abner Marsh standing proudly out on her bridge in his captain's coat and his new cap. The sun burned hot in a blue, blue sky, and every little snag and bluff reef was marked by golden ripples on the water, so the piloting came easy and the steamer made crack time. The New Orleans levee was jammed with steamers and all manner of sailing ships. The river was alive to the music of their whistles and bells. Marsh leaned on his walking stick and watched the city loom large ahead, listening to the fever dream call out to the other boats with a landing bell and a loud, wild whistle. He had been to New Orleans many a time in his days on the river, but never like this. Standing on the bridge of his own steamer, the biggest and fanciest and fleetest boat in sight, he felt like the lord of creation. Once they had tied up on the levee, though, there was work to do. Freight to unload, consignments to hunt up for the return trip to St. Louis, advertisements to take in the local papers. Marsh decided that the company ought to see about opening a regular office down here, so he busied himself looking at likely sites and making arrangements for starting a bank account and hiring an agent. That night he dined at the St. Charles Hotel with Jonathan Jeffers and Carl Fram, but his mind kept wandering away from the food to the dangers that Valerie had seemed so afraid of, and he wondered what Joshua York was up to. When Marsh returned to the steamer, Joshua was talking with his companions in the Texas parlour, and nothing seemed amiss, though Valerie, seated by his side, looked somewhat sullen and abashed. Marsh went to sleep and put the whole thing from his mind, and in the days that followed he hardly thought on it at all. The fever dream kept him too busy by day, and by night he dined well in the city, bragged up his boat over drinks and taverns near the levee, strolled through the Vieux Carré, admiring the lovely Creole ladies and all the courtyards and fountains and balconies. New Orleans was as fine as he remembered, Marsh thought at first. But then, gradually, a disquiet began to grow in him, a vague sense of wrongness that made him look at familiar things from new eyes. The weather was beastly. By day the heat was oppressive, the air thick and wet once you shut yourself off from the cool river breezes. Day and night, fumes rose up stinking from the open sewers, rich, rotten odours that wafted off the standing water like some vile perfume. No wonder New Orleans was so often taken by yellow fever, Marsh thought. The city was full of free men of colour, and lovely young quadroons and octoroons and griefs who dressed as fine as white women. But it was full of slaves as well. He saw them everywhere, running errands for their masters, sitting or milling forlornly in the slave pens on Morrow and Common Streets, going in long chained lines to and from the great exchanges, cleaning out the gutters. Even down by the steamer landing you couldn't escape the signs of slavery. The grand side-wheelers that plied the New Orleans trade were always taking black folks up and down the river, and Abner Marsh saw them come and go whenever he went down to the fever dream. The slaves rode in chains as often as not, sitting together miserably amidst the cargo, sweating in the heat of the furnaces.
"I don't like it none," Marsh complained to Jonathan Jeffers. "It ain't clean, and I tell you I won't have none of it on the fever dream. Nobody's going to stink up my boat with that kind of stuff, you hear?"
Jeffers gave him a wry look of appraisal.
"Why, Captain, if we don't traffic in slaves, we stand to lose a pile of money. You're sounding like an abolitionist." "I ain't no damned abolitionist," Marsh said hotly. "But I mean what I said. If a gentleman wants to bring a slave or two along, servants and such, that's fine. I'll take him cabin passage or deck passage, don't matter none to me. But we ain't going to take him as freight, all chained up by some goddamned traitor."
By the seventh night in New Orleans, Abner Marsh felt strangely sick of the city and anxious to be off. That night, Joshua York came down to supper with some river charts in his hand. Marsh had seen very little of his partner since their arrival.
"How do you fancy New Orleans?" Marsh asked York as the other seated himself.
"The city is lovely," York replied in an oddly troubled voice that made Marsh look up from the roll he was buttering. "I have nothing but admiration for the Vieux Carré. It is utterly unlike the other river towns we've seen, almost European, and some of the houses in the American section are grand as well. Nonetheless, I do not like it here."
Marsh frowned.
"Why is that?"
"I have a bad feeling, Abner. This city, the heat, the bright colours, the smells, the slaves. It is very alive, this New Orleans, but inside I think it is rotten with sickness."
Everything is so rich and beautiful here, the cuisine, the manners, the architecture, but beneath that... He shook his head. You see all those lovely courtyards, each boasting an exquisite well? And then you see the teamsters selling river water from barrels, and you realize that the well water is unfit to drink. You savor the rich sauces and the spices of the food, and then you learn that the spices are intended to disguise the fact that the meat is going bad. You wander through the Saint-Louis and cast your eyes upon all that marble and that delightful dome with the light pouring through it down onto the rotunda, and then you learn it is a famous slave mart where humans are sold like cattle. Even the graveyards are places of beauty here. No simple tombstones or wooden crosses, but great marble mausoleums, each prouder than the last, with statuary atop them and fine poetic sentiments inscribed in stone. But inside every one is a rotting corpse, full of maggots and worms. They must be imprisoned in stone because the ground is no good even for burying, and graves fill up with water. And pestilence hangs over this beautiful city like a pall. No, Abner, Joshua said with an odd, distant look in his grey eyes. I love beauty, but sometimes a thing lovely to behold conceals vileness and evil within. The sooner we are quit of this city, the better I shall like it.
Hell, said Abner Marsh. Damned if I can say why, but I feel just the same way. Don't fret, we can get out of here real quick.
Joshua York grimaced. Good, he said. But first I have one final task. He moved aside his plate and opened the chart he had brought to the table with him. Tomorrow at dusk I want to take the fever dream downriver.
Downriver? Marsh said in astonishment. Hell, ain't nothing downstream of here for us. Some plantations, lots of Cajuns, swamps and bayous, and then the Gulf.
Look, said York. His finger traced a path down the Mississippi. We follow the river down around through here. Turn off onto this bayou, and proceed about a half dozen miles to here. It won't take us long, and we can return the next night to pick up our passengers for St. Louis. I want to make a brief landing here, he jabbed. Abner Marsh's ham steak was set in front of him, but he ignored it, leaning over to see where Joshua was pointing.
Cypress Landing, he read from the chart. Well, I don't know.
He looked around the main cabin, three quarters empty now with no passengers aboard. Carl Fram, Whitey Blake, and Jack Eli were eating down the far end of the table.
Mr. Fram, Marsh called out. Come on down here a minute.
When Fram arrived, Marsh pointed out the route York had traced.
You pilot us downriver and up this here bayou, or do we draw too much?
Fram shrugged.
Some of them bayous is pretty wide and deep. Others you'd have trouble getting up with a yawl, let alone a steamer, but probably I can do it. There's landings and plantations down there, and other steamers get to 'em. Most of 'em ain't so big as this lady, though. It'd be slow going, I know that. We have to sound all the way and be real careful of snags and sandbars, and likely as not we'll have to saw off a mess of tree limbs if we don't want 'em knocking off our chimneys.
He leaned over to look at the chart.
Where are we going? I've been down that way once or twice.
Place called Cypress Landing, said Marsh.
Fram pursed his lips thoughtfully.
Shouldn't be too bad. That's the old Garou plantation. Steamers used to put in there regular, taking sweet potatoes and sugar cane to New Orleans. Garou died, though, him and his whole family, and Cypress Landing ain't been heard of much since. Although now that I recollect, there's some funny stories about them parts. Why be going there?
A personal matter, said Joshua York. Just see that we get there, Mr. Fram. We'll leave tomorrow at dusk.
You're the captain,
Fram said. He went on back to his meal.
Where the hell is my milk?
Abner Marsh complained. He looked around. The waiter, a slender Negro youth, lingered at the kitchen door.
Come on with my supper,
Marsh bellowed at him, and the boy started visibly. Marsh turned back to York.
This trip, he said, is it part of that thing you told me about?
Yes, York said curtly.
Dangerous?
Marsh asked. Joshua York shrugged.
I don't like this none, Marsh said. This vampire stuff.
He dropped his voice to a whisper when he said vampire. It will soon be over, Abner. I will make a call at this plantation, attend to some business, bring some friends back with me, and that will be the end of it.
Let me go with you, Marsh said. On this business of yours. I ain't saying I don't believe you, but it'd all be easier to credit if I could see one of these, you know... with my own eyes.
Joshua looked at him.
Marsh glanced into his eyes briefly, but something in there seemed to reach out and touch him, and suddenly, without meaning to, he had looked away. Joshua folded up the river chart. "I do not think it would be wise," he said, "but I will think about it. Excuse me, I have things to attend to." He rose and left the table. Marsh watched him go, unsure of what had just passed between them. Finally he muttered, "Ah, damn him anyhow," and turned his attention to his ham steak. Hours later, Abner Marsh had visitors. He was in his cabin, trying to sleep. The soft knock on his door woke him as if it had been a thunderclap, and Marsh could feel the pounding of his heart. For some reason he was scared. The cabin was pitch dark.
"Who is it?" he called out. "Damn you!" "Just Toby, Captain," came the soft, whispered reply.
Marsh's fear suddenly melted away and seemed silly. Toby Lanyard was the gentlest old soul ever set foot on a steamboat, and one of the meekest as well. Marsh called out,
"Come in!"
and lit a lamp by his bedside before going to open the door. Two men stood outside. Toby was about 60, bald but for a fringe of iron-grey hair around his black skull, his face worn and wrinkled and black as a pair of old, comfortable boots. With him was a younger negro, a short, stout, brown man in an expensive suit. In the dim light, it was a moment before Marsh recognized him as Jebediah Freeman, the barber he had hired up in Louisville.
"Captain," said Toby, "we wants to talk you private if we can."
Marsh waved them in.
"What's this about, Toby?"
he asked, closing the door.
"We's kind of spokesman," said the cook. "You know me a long time, Captain. You knows I wouldn't lie to you." "Course I do," said Marsh. "I wouldn't run off, neither. You done give me my freedom and all just for cooking for you. But some of them other niggers, the stokers and such, they won't listen to Jeb and me here about what a fine man you is. They's scared and likely to run off. The boy at supper tonight, he heard you and Cap'n York are talking about going down to this Cypress place, and now all the niggers is talking."
"What?"
Marsh said.
"You never been down here before, neither of you. What's Cypress landing to you?"
"Nothing at all," Jeb said. "But some of these other niggers heard of it. There's stories about this place, Captain. Bad stories. All the niggers run off from that place 'cause of things went on there. Terrible things, Captain. Just terrible."
"We come to ask you not to go on down there, Captain," Toby said. "You know I never asked you for nothing before." "No cook and no barber are going to tell me where to take my steamboat," Abner Marsh said sternly.
But then he looked at Toby's face and softened.
"Ain't nothing going to happen," he promised. "But if you two want to wait here in New Orleans, you go ahead. Won't need no cooking or no barbering on a short run like this."
Toby looked grateful, but said,
"The stokers, though. Them I need. They ain't going to stay, Cap'n, I tell you. I reckon Harry Michael have a thing or two to say about that."
Jeb shook his head. "Them niggers is scared of Harry Mike, sure enough. But they're more scared of this place you're fixing to take us. They're run off, sure as anything." Marsh swore.
"Damn fools," he said. "Well, we can't get up steam without no stokers. But it was Joshua wanted to make this trip, not me. Give me a few moments to dress, boys. We'll hunt up Cap'n York and speak to him about this."
The two black men exchanged looks, but said nothing. Joshua York was not alone. When Marsh strode up to the door of the captain's cabin, he heard his partner's voice, loud and rhythmic from within. Marsh hesitated, then groaned when he realized that Joshua was reciting poetry, aloud even. He hammered at the door with his stick, and York broke off his reading and told them to come in. Joshua sat calmly with a book in his lap, a long pale finger marking his place, a glass of wine on the table beside him. Valerie was in the other chair. She looked up at Marsh and quickly away. She had been avoiding him since that night on the Texas, and Marsh found it easy to ignore her.
"Tell him, Toby," he said.
Toby seemed to have far more difficulty finding words than he had with Marsh, but he finally got it all out. When he was done, he stood with his eyes downcast, twisting his old battered hat in his hands. Joshua York wore a grim look. "What do the men fear?" he asked in a polite, cold tone.
"Getting et, sir."
"Give them my word that I will protect them." Toby shook his head.
"Cap'n York, no disrespect, but them niggers is afraid of you too, especially now that you wants us to go down there."
"They think you's one of them," Jeb put in. "You and your friends, luring us down there to the others like it were. Them stories say those folks there don't come out, but they ain't used the same, Captain. Just the same. Of course, me and Toby knows better, but not them others.
Tell them we'll double their wages for their time on the bayou, Marsh said.
Toby didn't look up, but shook his head.
They don't care about no money. They's gonna run off.
Abner Marsh swore.
Joshua, if neither money nor Harry Mike can get them to do it, they ain't a-gonna do it. We'll have to discharge them all and get us some new stokers and rousters and such, but that'll take us some time.
Valerie leaned forward and laid her hand on Joshua York's arm. Please, Joshua, she said quietly, listen to them. This is a sign. We were not meant to go. Take us back to St. Louis. You've promised to show me St. Louis.
I shall, Joshua said. But not until my business is concluded.
He frowned at Toby and Jeb.
I can reach Cypress Landing overland easily enough, he said. No doubt that would be the quickest and simplest way to accomplish my goals. But that does not satisfy me, gentlemen. Either this is my steamer or it is not. Either I am captain here or I am not. I will not have my crew distrusting me. I will not have my men afraid of me.
He set the book of poems on the table with an audible thump, clearly frustrated.
"Have I done anything to harm you, Toby?" Joshua demanded. "Have I mistreated any of your people? Have I done anything at all to earn this suspicion?"
"No, sir," Toby said softly.
"No, you say. Yet they will desert me despite that."
"Yes, sir, Captain. Afraid so," Toby said.
Joshua York took on a hard, determined look. "What if I proved I was not what they think me?" His eyes went from Toby to Jeb and back again.
If they saw me in daylight, would they trust me?
No, Valerie said. She looked aghast.
Joshua, you can't.
I can,
he said,
and will.
Well, Toby? The cook raised his head, saw York's eyes, and nodded slowly.
Well, maybe. If they seed you wasn't...
Joshua studied the two black men for a long time.
Very well, he said at last. I will dine with you tomorrow afternoon, then. Have a place set for me.
Well, I'll be damned, said Abner Marsh.